The Civic Circle is a youth-led podcast by the Bucks County Beacon tackling politics and policy from a Gen Z lens. I'm your co-host, Sarah.
I'm Mallory.
And I'm Alexandra. And we're all students from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, chatting about activism, advocacy, and all the political happenings affecting our generation today.
We're focusing on PA politics. I want to serve as a call to action for all young people to get involved in the civic process and demand change.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Civic Circle. We hope that everyone has been enjoying this beautiful spring weather. As we know, February was Black History Month and March is Women's History Month. As we wrap up March, we thought it would be important to do a little bit of reflection and talk a little bit about why these are so important. We also have a brief interview with Maya Lubin, who is a senior higher access coordinator at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Maya is an incredible leader and her identity helps her shape her equally powerful work. First, however, let's start with some background on Black History and Women's History Months. Could one of y'all explain a little bit about the origin of these celebrations?
Sure, I'll take this one. So according to NAACP, the idea of Black History Month was first conceptualized by Carter G. Woodson. He was an African-American historian, author, journalist, and the founder of the Association for the Study of African-American Life and History. Woodson launched Negro History Week in the second week of February in 1926 to coincide with the birthdays of both Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. By the late 1960s, that one week of February expanded to the entire month, and Gerald Ford was the first president to recognize Black History Month in 1976.
I can also talk a little bit about Women's History Month, if you like. So it also began as a one-week celebration. So it first started in, I believe, Santa Rosa, California, and the Education Task Force of the Sonoma County Commission on the Status of Women planned and executed a Women's History Week celebration. And I think that was in 1978. And then after that, the movement kind of spread across the country. Other communities started doing their own Women's History Week celebrations around a year after this. And then finally in 1980, the National Women's History Project successfully lobbied for national recognition and got President Jimmy Carter to issue the first presidential proclamation declaring March 8th National Women's History Week. And then in 1987, Congress finally passed Public Law 100-9, officially designating March Women's History Month.
Shout out to Jimmy Carter. He is probably my favorite president. So that's so sly of him. There are so many incredible women and Black Americans who have contributed so much to our society. While they faced enormous challenges and oppressive barriers, these Americans have achieved amazing things in every field from STEM to sports. It's so important for us to be talking about this now as race and diversity come under attack at every level from the right. For instance, I remember being super excited when the College Board announced that they had developed a new curriculum for the new AP African American Studies course to be taught in high schools, just to be met with frustration when Governor DeSantis, surprise, surprise, who has taken many strides to make education less equitable, banned it from being taught in Florida.
I was also really excited about the potential of learning about African American history, especially on the AP level, but unsurprisingly, you know, Council Rock South was not taking or making a large effort to get it implemented into our curriculum. I do remember talking about it during a meeting with my Black student union, but other than that, it was not really discussed. I really do think it's so important for us to acknowledge how Black Americans and women have shaped our country, and painting identity politics and diversity history as woke or unnecessary underscores like the many obstacles these leaders had to overcome to serve in politics, work in law, and more. And not to mention, it also erases the history, both good and bad, of just the entire Black population. By not making an effort to implement it, it really makes you think about what and whose history the districts are valuing most.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's really frustrating that there isn't the option to take AP African American History in like a lot of schools. Like you guys said, I, along with you, would like love to take that class. And I think it's crazy just to disregard all that history that's crucial just because of, you know, like wokeness or like trying to gain political power and stuff. So yeah, I completely agree. Moving on a bit, to commemorate both Black and Women's History Months, today we will be talking about and celebrating Black women who do amazing work in our communities, along with speaking to Maya, as mentioned above. To start this off, let me kind of talk about important Black female figures from our area. Who do you guys think about? Like, who comes to mind?
Someone that immediately comes to mind for me is Representative Joanna McClinton.
So So real, me too. For some context, Representative McLennan is the Pennsylvania Speaker of the House and serves West and Southwest Philadelphia, as well as Yeadon and Darby in Delaware County.
And if we're talking about someone important in our area, we cannot go without mentioning her. I mean, she was the first woman and Black person to be elected as House Democratic Caucus Chair and the first woman to be elected House Democratic Leader. She was also the first woman to be elected Speaker of the Pennsylvania House. Just in general, she's a trailblazer beyond measure, and her efforts to end things like hair type discrimination and price gouging and increased voting options show how she not only cares about the upkeep of Pennsylvania, but also just overall happiness of our constituents.
Yeah, and she's also made incredible efforts to recognize Juneteenth as a holiday in Pennsylvania, working along some other great representatives like Malcolm Kenyatta, who we all love and is a Black icon in his own right.
Truly so amazing. We just really are so lucky to have Representative McLennan as the House Speaker here in PA. She's just an amazing person, and I can't wait to see what she does as her years in office continue. So another person who comes to mind when we talk about important Black women figures from our area is Mayor Sherrell Parker.
Definitely. Starting as a Pennsylvania House Representative and Philly City Council member, Sherrell Parker became the first woman mayor in the 342-year history of Philadelphia, which is absolutely crazy. She was just inaugurated in January.
And actually, shortly after winning that election, Mayor Parker released a very ambitious 100-day plan. This plan outlines everything that she hoped to get done in her first 100 days of being in office, included things like increasing public safety, promoting a green and clean Philadelphia, increasing access to housing, improving education, economic opportunity, and more. And while we have not seen the most promising outcomes of the 100-day plan yet, we are wishing her administration luck in the issues that they vocalized.
Parker's identity is incredibly important for a city with a large Black population and helps people make feel represented, but it's still important to do the work as the mayor and not just serve as a figurehead. There's one more woman from our area that I would like to mention. That is Morgan B. Cephas. She is a native of West Philly and has been representing District 192 as a Pennsylvania House representative since 2017.
So Representative Cephas has accomplished a lot throughout her time in the PA House. She has introduced laws looking to reverse the trend of maternal mortality, laws that look to expand financial relief for childcare expenses, and also recognize the personhood and dignity of incarcerated women, which is something that is very important to me and I know very important to all of us. Since her first term, she secured over $12 million in state funds to improve local schools, parks, businesses, and libraries in her district, which is absolutely amazing.
And on top of all that great work, she also works on several committees, including being a member of the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus, chairwoman of the Women and Girls of Color Subcommittee, a member of the Philadelphia delegation, and vice chairwoman of the Democratic Women's Health Caucus.
Like Representative McLennan, Mayor Parker, and Representative Cephas, Maya has been doing amazing things for those seeking higher education as part of the Lawyers Committee. Now, here's our interview with her.
Hi, Maya. Thank you so much for taking time to hop on Stoke Circle with us today. So, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, your educational background and your career journey?
Sure. First, thank you all so much for having me. And bravo to each of you for cultivating a community and a space for these really critical conversations in a critical time as well. So kudos to you all. Again, I'm Maya Lubin, a daughter of Mississippi and its rich legacy, living in the DMV area with my husband. But speaking of husband, you may have noticed the Haitian last name that I'm really honored to have, given the beauty and courage of the Haitian culture. So, as I mentioned, I'm from Mississippi, a place called Meridian, Mississippi. And a quick story for you. I once had a professor who assigned a problem that we were to work out. And there were a few examples of school districts, or actually, there were cities. That we were supposed to be considering. But there was one that caught my eye. And these places, they were described in terms of data. So, for example, this place that caught my eye, 100% of the students were FERPL eligible, which is economic speak for free or reduced price lunch eligible, mostly students of color, et cetera. And this one caught my eye because it sounded just like Meridian. The only problem is that the professor called this imaginary city Poorville. our lives aren't always understood in chronological order. Sometimes we have to look backward and forward and inward and backward again to get a full picture of ourselves. And I say this for multiple reasons. This moment, of many others, but this Poorville moment didn't happen until I was in graduate school. But it describes a feeling that I had in grade school, elementary and middle and high school. I grew up seeing the richness of my community, the strength, the resilience, the faith of the people around me, and more importantly, the sound of faith turning pain into beauty through my community's gorgeous music. But there was an undercurrent, a baseline that someone else was playing to pollute the song, if you will. And the pollution came from and included divestment, disenfranchisement, stripping folks of their history, et cetera. So now in grade school, I didn't identify that undercurrent as such, but I did look around and realize that something was missing, something was off. And for some reason, the people around me didn't have the opportunities that I felt like they should, especially with regard to education. That's a huge piece of the puzzle. So I was clearly offended by even an imaginary community being labeled as Poorville in graduate school, but it struck a nerve because I got the Poorville revelation in grade school. I don't see my community this way, but others do. And this is what leads to disparities and the snowball effect of those disparities. So that's why I went to my alma mater, Mississippi State. I was horrified on the first day. I only wanted to be in one student organization and make three friends and graduate. And that would be a successful undergraduate career for me. But MSU really turned out to be an incubator to stir up gifts and talents and dreams that I hadn't yet seen in myself. So I was honored to serve as the institution's first Black female student body president. I left Mississippi State and went to Brown University to pursue a master's of urban education policy. And I'm now channeling each of those experiences into the work I do now at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. There, I work with communities and students and others to build comprehensive strategies to close gaps and broaden opportunity for historically underserved communities.
Maya, you are so powerful and such a good speaker. And every time I listen to you, I'm so inspired. So thank you for sharing all of that. Now, moving on to your work at the Lawyers Committee, what drew you to working there, and how do your identities shape the work that you do now?
So the Lawyers Committee was established 61 years ago, at the direction of President Kennedy, following a huge meeting in the White House with a bunch of lawyers. And this was at the height of the Civil Rights Movement. And there was a need to push the movement forward in the courtroom. And the Lawyers Committee's model was to leverage the resources of the private bar in the fight for civil rights, given that there weren't, a plethora of civil rights litigators at the time. So we now continue this work, not only through litigation, but through advocacy and policy across a number of issues like voting rights and fair housing and economic justice and so forth. I'm obviously on the educational opportunities team, where we work to guarantee all students receive equal education opportunities in public schools and in institutions of higher learning. So my decision to join the Lawyers Committee team was confirmed by the organization's history steeped in the civil rights movement and its deep ties to Mississippi. Mississippi was really where the work of the Lawyers Committee began in 1963. I also joined the team and the organization because it was being led by a Black woman, Kristen Clark, who is now the United States Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division. I was really inspired to see a Black woman at an organization making the impact that the Lawyers Committee was making. And I leapt at the opportunity to join the team. But, I was initially joined to the organization because of the work itself and the higher education advocacy projects that I would have the opportunity to lead. I knew the feel of the work that I wanted to do, but I honestly wouldn't have even known to look for a civil rights organization to do that work. So it just all worked together seamlessly. So, as you can probably tell, I don't see my work as work per se. I see the way that I spend my time and use my gifts and expertise as an extension of myself and who I am to be while I'm here, right? So my work is an extension of my identity. For example, I mentioned that we don't always understand our lives in chronological order. While I did awesome things as student body president at Mississippi State, there was a time where I felt some disappointment since, at that point, I knew more and better understood systems. And because I now had that knowledge, I wish I had done more then. But then I realized I'm savvy at the work that I do now because of my time there and because of my experience. So my whole story, the beautiful and challenging portions, drive how I spend my time today. And I just happen to spend quite a lot of that time working, like most people, right?
And that was a beautiful way to encompass what you do. I know you say you don't call it work, but the work that you do is essential. So we appreciate that. And on that same topic of identity, we're wrapping up Black History Month and we're moving into Women's History Month. So just a question for you is what does Women's History Month and Black History Month mean to you? And if there are, if you have some, what are some icons in your field that have inspired you to pursue the path you're on?
Yeah, so Women's History and Black History Month for me are times of reflection and connection. It's a time to honor the memories and sacrifices and the joys, something we often miss, the joys of those who have come before us. And then the deeper work of reflecting on what responsibility, what mandate, what questions do those legacies leave for us today? And connecting that to connecting what you find to how you move. So there are too many greats to name, and I fear I'll miss someone. But right now, I'll say that I'm inspired by the work of Dr. Bernice King, Dr. King's daughter. She's leading the King Center for Nonviolence. And I don't say this because of the cliche and sometimes empty Dr. King, speeches that we hear around this time. I say this because I heard her speak in person last year about the beloved community, and it really struck me to my core. And I was specifically convicted by the reimagined sort of definition of nonviolence. I'm actually enrolling in the King Center's online nonviolence course because I felt and I feel challenged to recalibrate how I think about, how I talk about, and go about my work. So the question is, am I leading higher ed advocacy and policy work out of anger or hope, out of joy or frustration, out of love or blame? So, for example, our team had the honor of representing students and alumni in the recent affirmative action cases, students for fair admissions versus Harvard, and students for fair admissions versus University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And when talking about this work and students for fair admissions, am I using language to talk about those folks that moves past stating facts of discrimination and moves towards a darkness that I'm claiming to fight against? And we have to remember that just because you're on the right side, it doesn't mean you're moving with love. It's true. We know that hate can incarnate itself as policy, but so can love. And we know that only love can drive out hate. So if I'm to do this work, I want to do it all the way. And that's what I'm really inspired by and really convicted by right now.
Super powerful, as always. That's really wonderful to hear. And finally, our last question for you is, what words of advice do you have for any young people interested in pursuing a path similar to yours?
Yeah, so I do higher education access and equity work, not because I believe that you just deserve access to college. You do, but it's bigger than that. I believe that you deserve access to you. You deserve access to the fullness of all that you can be. And whatever tools or resources that you need to chase down every inkling of a gift or talents or brilliance inside of you deserve it. Full stop. So while college isn't everyone's path, campuses are places that glitter with exposure and hope and diversity of thoughts and ideas that often churn us closer to the us we always knew that we were. And if that's where you think that you can get closer to you, if a college campus is where you think you can get closer to the you deserve to do that, and you deserve to get there without any barriers. And so this in turn is my advice to young people. Don't chase after a career or a path or prestige or money even. Chase after yourself. Chase after you, the you that you know is in there, but you need resources and experiences to sort of realize all of it. And I'll be honest, it will be scary. It will be difficult. There will be high highs and low lows. It takes faith and courage, self-love, and a keen ear to hear your inner voice. But it's what you deserve. And everything else, more than you could ever dream of, will be added to you when you honor you. And the truth is, all of us need you as well. We need the fullness of you as well. So that we all can be what we need to be while we're here. So that's the advice that I would have. Chase you.
That was amazing advice, Matt. I will definitely be taking some of it. So thank you. And once again, I want to thank you again for coming on the Civic Circle podcast, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys, so much. I appreciate you.
We want to thank Maya again for speaking to us and giving her perspective as a Black woman in the public policy industry. One thing that I found, I think, extra compelling about Maya's interview is her work in the public policy industry as a Haitian woman. And as we all know, if I haven't mentioned it enough, my family's also Haitian. And one of the main reasons why I'm going into the field of public policy is basically to create a federal system that would never allow what's happening in Haiti right now to happen. And it's clear that Maya is doing the work and encouraging others to take initiative as well. And for that, I have all the admiration in the world for her.
True, I completely agree. So all these women have made such huge strides in their careers and serve as an inspiration to those who are looking to do the same. We thank them for all that they do, and we are so happy to feature them in celebration of Black History Month and Women's History Month.
We also want to give recognition to the women of Pennsylvania who may not be an elected official or serving directly in politics. Women, especially Black women, work hard every single day to make Pennsylvania what it is and have fostered so much goodness in our communities. Your efforts do not go unnoticed, and we are incredibly thankful for all of you.
And while we spoke about Black women from Pennsylvania earlier, we're also living in a time where Black women in politics are taking prominence nationally. As we all grew up under the Obama presidency, we all watched Michelle Obama truly mark her place as an intelligent and charismatic first lady. I can especially remember her being on the iCarly episode and being like, yeah, that's what I want to be when I grow up. She took the position of first lady and catalyzed herself and her ideologies into the public sphere, an action that can be daunting for Black women, especially considering the labels that can follow after. We also witnessed the first Black, Asian, and female vice president sworn in recently. Kamala Harris's appointment helped so many young girls and girls of color in general realize that they could accomplish incredible things in the political space as well.
I also remember that iCarly episode. I love that you mentioned that, Mallory. But one of my favorite moments of Obama's first ladyship was when she hosted a dance workshop for local students under the theme Honoring the Past While Celebrating the Present, 7 Years of Living African American History. She brought in iconic leaders in dance and held a panel discussion that celebrated the contributions of Black women to the field of dance.
Vice President Harris has also consistently spoken about the importance of Black history to our country, particularly with the ongoing educational battles across the country right now on issues such as critical race theory, which Mallory and I talked about a little bit earlier. This has been a theme across Harris's time in office.
And I'd also like to mention one of my personal heroes, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who was sworn to the Supreme Court of the United States in 2022. She's the first Black woman to serve in this position as well. And Jackson is just an incredible and powerful speaker who stood up for Black communities throughout her time in the Black Student Union, Black Student Association at Harvard, to dissenting against the Affirmation Action ruling last summer. She's an absolute powerhouse and brings a vital perspective to the highest court of the land.
We'd like to conclude this episode by stating that we will be going on a brief hiatus over the next few months as we work to kind of restructure things and come up with new ideas for you all. We are super grateful for all the support that we've received since we first launched this project last fall. For updates on when we'll be relaunching, follow us on Twitter at CivicCircleBC.
And with that, we'll see you all soon.
Thank you for listening to The Civic Circle, a podcast by the Bucks County Beacon. I've been your co-host, Alexandra.
Sarah.
And Mallory. The music is Bet On It by Silent Partner. For more progressive insight and analysis on Bucks County, Pennsylvania, go to www.buckscountybeacon.com.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate us and leave a review.
Subscribe to get updates on our next episode and when we return. Follow at Bucks Co Beacon and at Civic Circle BC on Twitter for updates.